We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway!
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat. Jason, the Bulls are underway in the preseason. They've played two games so far, both against the Houston Rockets. The first game was an absolutely abysmal effort by the Bulls. They lost that one 125-104. The second game was on Sunday night. Bulls looked a little bit better in that game with some better performances from their starters. And then an impressive run in the fourth quarter. They outscore the Rockets 31-12. Patrick Williams was on the floor for that. It was mostly a lot of bench guys, but the Bulls did take control of the preseason game in the fourth quarter. So the Bulls are 1-1 after two preseason games. But that's not the only news going on with the team right now.
Yeah, obviously, besides the Bulls being back on the court, we actually news broke like about an hour ago about Noah Vonleh, who was part of this group of players who like mysteriously missed Sunday's game. And obviously, during these times, the automatic assumption you make is that it is COVID related. Like the Bulls are kind of sketchy about it. It's been kind of just a weird around the league. Like it's like almost obvious. I think they were regarded as excused absences. It was like Tomas Satoransky, I think Devin Dotson, a couple other, I think Luke Kornet. So just like a host of guys missed this last game on Sunday with excused absences. This was with Garrett Temple tested positive. He hasn't joined the team yet. So it just came out an hour ago that Noah Vonleh did test positive for COVID, and now he's going to get waived. He came out with a statement through Chris Haynes that he is getting waived. And like obviously very unfortunate timing. He was on a non-guaranteed deal, so not totally sure if he would have made the team. Anyways, he did play in that first game. He did play over Felicio in that first game. Felicio did play in the second game with all these guys out. But like you do wonder like if he possibly would have had a chance to make the roster. Again, they would have had to have cut somebody, whether that be maybe Luke Kornet, whether they dump Felicio somehow. But I mean, they brought him back on this non-guaranteed deal. He got some time in that first game. I know it was mostly a blowout, but I mean, it seems super cold. Like again, he might've been waived anyways, but because he has to go into this quarantine, I believe it's a 10-day quarantine. Like he wouldn't have been able to play in the Bulls' last two couple preseason games. So now he's just gone. Maybe they're doing it so he can maybe get another shot somewhere, but I mean, he can't do anything right now. So it's not like he can go sign somewhere right away. Like I said, I don't know if they actually did like him, or maybe we're considering giving him a full roster spot, guaranteeing his deal. I believe his contract would have been guaranteed basically right on the start of the season, which is December 22nd. So it was kind of really brutal timing for Noah Vonleh. Like I said, it's not like he was going to play, or hopefully he wouldn't have played like a big role if he did make the team, but just Just a super unfortunate situation, and just kind of the highlighting the weirdness of the season, just the way everything was just so like murky yesterday, and how the Bulls just like weren't really telling anybody about what was actually happening, and now we find this out.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and like you said, you know, Vonleh, you also got Cornette, Dotson. We know Garrett Temple has already had COVID. Satoransky, we don't really know what's up with Adam Okoka right now either, right? In both of the games, he's been marked as DNP, not with team.
So yeah, you assume?
So there's a lot of uncertainty, and this is what was always going to happen when the league decided not to do a bubble. And I don't really know why they decided not to do a bubble, if it had something to do with, like, you know, getting the venue secured, if they're going to do the bubble again. Did it have something to do with TV contracts? Did the players just not want to agree to it, to go to a bubble for 5 months instead of, you know, last time it was 2 or 3 months for some teams? But this was always going to happen. And we've seen it happen in the NFL. We saw it happen in baseball. Teams this year, the biggest deciding factor in the regular season is going to be who catches COVID and who doesn't. And the thing that is just so sad is it's not just the players who are putting themselves at risk. It's like they're going city to city. They're traveling all around. There's an entire economy just around the NBA. Those people are not making millions of dollars. And those people are oftentimes super vulnerable to these situations of getting sick. So, you know, seeing the way that COVID has decimated you know, the other sports that have tried to return without a bubble, I'm just wondering, like, why didn't the NBA return to a bubble? And the biggest issue here is not canceled games. It's people dying. We're still seeing as many people die each day, like up to, what, 2,500 people die in recent days, the same number as 9/11. So that's the severity of the problem right now. And I don't know, man. It's like as soon as the NBA decided not to do a bubble, you knew this was going to happen. The league is just kind of like accepting it. They're hoping to be saved by the vaccine, sort of just like the rest of society right now. But even like the idea of the vaccine coming at some point this season, like that's just going to be another huge news cycle as it pertains to the NBA. It's going to be about, you know, players having access to the vaccine before a lot of normal people. You're going to have a lot of players, or at least some players, who aren't going to want to take the vaccine. You're going to have guys who already had COVID who are now going to be like, well, I have the antibodies, I'm not getting the vaccine. So, you know, all of this really could have been helped by just doing another bubble. And it's like the NBA got so much damn praise from around the rest of the sports world for pulling off the bubble. They basically showed everyone else how to do it. At the same time, like, you know, two pitchers on the Indians have to like drive home from Chicago because they went to a bar. And the Denver Broncos played a game with literally no quarterbacks. They had to call up a wide receiver from the practice squad to play quarterback. And the NBA actually did it right. And they actually kept everyone safe. So why didn't they just go back to the bubble? I don't know. And to me, like, it's sort of hard to take this season at face value just because it's in the middle of a pandemic. And until the vaccine comes and is widely distributed and taken by everyone, it's just like going to be the biggest thing interrupting this season in terms of like who's available to play, you know, guys trying to return from it, maybe like some injury problems just from the condensed schedule because they're trying to squeeze in 72 games in a shorter time frame. So yeah, man, like it's already affecting the Bulls. By the second preseason game, they already have maybe an outbreak of COVID on the team. And I don't know how you feel about it, Jason, but it's just sort of like, to me, it just like totally overwhelms all the other basketball thoughts I have going into this season because it just, it feels so like such a compromised season.
Yeah, it's just, it's very, it's super weird. And you mentioned the stuff about the vaccine. Obviously, that's starting the very first vaccines, I think today, went out in the United States. And you do wonder, like, is the NBA going and like these other leagues going to get in the front of the line in terms of getting that? Or somehow, like, I'm not, who knows? I'm sure they'd like to keep that on the down low if they did. And you mentioned like, you know, some guys might not want to take it. Like, I wonder if they'll make that mandatory. I'm not sure if they'll like that. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it just definitely makes this, I mean, just super weird and bizarre and makes you feel kind of icky and who knows. And I know, I mean, another big story over the weekend, I don't want to speculate too much here, but the Florida player who collapsed on the court there, It is not sure. The article I read like an hour or two ago was that he was in a medically induced coma. It was not sure if he actually had COVID earlier, but I know there have been some like issues with like the heart, long-term issues. I can't say that like I don't even want to try to say it, but like you wonder if maybe there was something going on with him. So like you have that whole situation now, which should be like a huge story. This guy, hopefully, obviously he pulls through, but like, this is like a really good college basketball player might die. Like is not out of the woods yet from possibly this. Like I said, I don't want to speculate too much because we don't have actual like full details here, but like it's just another scary thing. And I know there've been a couple other players throughout sports that I know while it doesn't affect most of these guys seriously, there are a few guys where it sucked. It was really bad. I mean, even some other really good players have had some symptoms and they've talked about their experiences with it. And they said, it was bad. And I mean, I know Mo Bamba, it took a while for him to get, he's still getting his conditioning back. I think he's mostly over it now, but it still like took him a while. So it's not like while younger people like us and these athletes, like usually it doesn't have much of an effect on them. It's still like, it's not just like death versus being totally fine. Like there is a middle ground here with some of these symptoms and long-term effects. So it definitely has, definitely is something to be worried about here. And they're going to try to do their best. To your point about like why they didn't do another bubble, I do think a lot of it was probably just the players didn't want to do it again. Like they did it for so long and they were just like, we're not doing that shit again. That would be my guess. I'm not sure exactly. But I mean, obviously when they were doing those negotiations to start the season, they were talking, well, are we going to do like a Christmas start? Or are we going to do like later in January? Like there were even some thought about doing maybe starting even later. But I think what they ended up deciding was they didn't want to do a bubble again because they just didn't want to go through that again. And then they wanted to get it done, start the season earlier because of like they didn't want to conflict with the Olympics. I don't think they wanted it to run like into next football season again. And they wanted to get it more back on like the normal NBA schedule. So instead of kind of waiting until maybe the vaccine was widely distributed, they just kind of pushed it all up for various reasons.
Yeah, and all those reasons should have been secondary to the fact that the virus is still killing a ton of people in the country. Yeah. It's killing more people than ever, right? Certainly more than when they paused the league the first time in early March. So it's going to be the biggest storyline of the season. And, you know, we'll see how quickly do we anticipate that the entire league is going to be vaccinated? You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I don't know.
Vaccine news keeps coming out every day. And, you know, I'm still not totally sure like what the timeline looks like for the vast majority of the people.
Sounds like March, vaccinated. April. I think Fauci was on, was saying today that hopefully March, early April for wide distribution to most regular Americans that like don't have like underlying conditions and stuff like that.
And you can already imagine a scenario where the league is like trying to cram people back into arenas for the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right. Because they're going to want to try to get all the revenue they can. And I think with the vaccine too, from what I've heard, like you're going to need multiple doses of it. You know, so that could take some time too. It's the biggest story of the season. And yeah, what happened with Keontae Johnson this weekend at Florida is just so scary. The fact that I woke up on Sunday morning and there still wasn't an update, and I woke up on Monday morning and there still wasn't really an update on him, and then, you know, later in Monday afternoon, finally we got some news, and it's that he got transported from a hospital in Tallahassee to Gainesville and that he's in a medically induced coma. So really scary stuff with Keontae Johnson. I've been thinking about it all weekend. Hopefully he can be okay. Because, you know, if you think putting professional athletes through this, like unpaid college kids who are doing this, I mean, come on, totally exposes the whole system in ways that we've already known it was broken. So, we are going to talk some basketball though. We're going to talk about the Bulls' first two preseason games.
Yeah. Let's, before we get into these preseason games, let's, take a quick break and, hear from our sponsors. Indeed, and Bet Online. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. Only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job. That makes Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. are visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need, and that's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. So try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. This offer is valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can still get in on some bonuses. You can start off wagering on a variety of different football bets, future bets as well, all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today. Take full advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget that the promo code is BLUEWIRE, all one word, at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, we're back. We're going to talk about the Bulls' first two preseason games. First one, Bulls look terrible. They lose 125 to 104. Second one, Bulls have a huge fourth quarter. They win 104-91. Jason, you wrote something up on some takeaways from this game. So, you know, we could do this in a few different ways, but I think a logical first place to start is with the point guard situation. The one bit of news we had coming into the first preseason game is that Billy Donovan said he was going to give Kobe White the keys to the offense, and that Kobe was, you know, likely going to be the primary ball handler and the de facto point guard. Billy Donovan also said that he was going to judge Kobe not just on how well he scored himself, but on how well the rest of the team was playing. And through the first two games, I think Kobe White as starting point guard remains a gigantic question mark coming into this season, and is probably the biggest reason why I think the Bulls are going to be really bad again this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go totally that far, but I don't want to. Yeah, I don't know, because like the first game was obviously terrible. His like final numbers looked fine. Like he had like 15-6. His shooting percentages were okay, but obviously the offense was terrible. John Wall absolutely roasted him. I mean, this was John Wall's first game. Like you want to say, oh, the Bulls haven't played in 9 months. Like they're rusty. John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins were coming off huge injuries, and John Wall hasn't played in 2 years, and John Wall came out and absolutely roasted Kobe White. And like I said, well, White's overall numbers looked fine, and I think that's going to be the case a lot this year, is where his numbers will probably look fine. He'll put up 20 some points a game. He'll get a few assists, but that doesn't necessarily mean much. As you said, like that Donovan quote was really good about how, you know, I'll know Kobe will get his, but like, I want you to judge him on how the team plays. And the team obviously did not play very well in that first game. And he missed some plays. Just like he can make basic point pick and roll reads. And we saw I thought he played a little better in that second game. Again, he shot well in that game, in game number two as well. He put up 20 points. He had 4 assists. He had some bad turnovers. He did make some nice pick and roll reads. Had some highlights in that bloggable post with some of the plays that he made. But yeah, I mean, it's going to come down to, can he run a high level offense? Can he make advanced reads and pick and roll and when making passes to guys? And I know like a guy, Will Gottlieb. I think Stefan Noe, they both do like good highlight stuff on Twitter as games are going on. Just kind of highlighting some of the stuff that he missed in terms of some reads. And that's just kind of, he's going to have to get better at it. He's going to be a work in progress. We knew that. And it's why we kind of wanted them to bring in another veteran point guard. I know Satoransky did better as a bench guy. I think he had something like 6 assists coming off the bench, kind of stabilized the offense a bit in that first game before they just ended up getting wiped out again. But the starting unit was absolutely roasted in that first game, but all like basically the entire team had like minus 20 or worse plus minuses. This is against the Rockets team that with John Wall and Marcus Cousins coming back from long absences, no James Harden, no PJ Tucker, no Christian Wood. So this is like that Rockets roster the Bulls played the first couple games was not good, not good at all. And like I said, Kobe White was fine. Like I said, the dude is going to get buckets. His shot looks great. He made a few nice plays in terms of his passing, but overall, like, I wouldn't say like I'm super encouraged. Like I guess it was kind of what I expected, because even though the Bulls did win game two, they were still down six going into the fourth quarter, and the Rockets played basically just their bum squad, their like G League squad in the fourth quarter, and the Bulls took over that game and won it. But like, they were losing, I know like Zach and Kobe were better in that second game, and they were both positives in the plus minus. And I know I don't want to go too much in a single game plus minus from a preseason game, but I mean, still overall, like, I wouldn't say I was super encouraged. It was basically kind of what we expected. Kobe and Zach shot well. They got buckets. In terms of running an effective offense, wasn't totally there. Although that was not all on, I wouldn't say all of it was on Kobe White. We'll talk about this more in a bit with Wendell Carter missing shots. Lowry was absolutely atrocious in the second game after shooting pretty decently well in that first game, but Lowry was 1 of 10 in the second game. Carter, it is good that he's shooting threes, but he's 1 of 9, and he missed some chippies in that second game. So definitely a mixed bag out of Kobe White and just kind of the entire team in general, which overall I just wasn't super encouraged.
Yeah, it's been the biggest problem with the Bulls since they traded Jimmy Butler, right? Is they haven't had a guard who can consistently make the right reads and right decisions every time down the floor. A lot of those opportunities fell to LaVine last year. He wasn't very good at it. The Bulls finished 29th in offensive efficiency. So even though Zach put up some great numbers, you know, his impact on the team in terms of decision-making and playmaking, it obviously wasn't that successful if they had the second worst offense in the NBA. Kobe, I feel like it's the exact same thing. Like, Kobe can really score, and it's tough because I'm going to, like, be critical of Kobe here, but he has obviously very good scoring ability and, like, impressive shooting touch. He's super fast. He's good in transition. He has a lot of positives as a scorer, but having him be the point guard, you're just setting yourselves up. I keep thinking of the Orlando Magic tweet where they congratulated Shelvin Mack on leading the team in assists with 3.8 assists per game. Like, that's what the Bulls are setting themselves up for, where like, Kobe's just not a natural facilitator. He's going to be at his best when he's looking for his own offense. His ideal roles at this point in his career and where he could like actually positively impact a team is just as like a bench scorer and a guy who you could play either on or off the ball in a variety of lineups. I think that like having the playmaking duty fall to him though, is that being the main facilitator is just going to be really difficult for the Bulls, because I just don't think that him or LaVine, quite frankly, can really be counted on to initiate above average offense. So that's sort of where the Bulls are. So now the question is like, well, why don't you just let Kobe be the point guard? Just to see what you have in him this year, right? Like, the Bulls really are playing a season without really any real stakes or expectations, so you might as well just see if Kobe is able to handle
the
playmaking burden. But then it's like, I mean, are we ever going to know how good Markkanen is if you don't have someone who can give him the ball? And, you know, Markkanen, we'll get to him too, but he was, you know, again, not very impressive. You already talked about Carter. Offensively, still doesn't look good, so... The problem is bigger than just the playmakers. I think at this point, like, you, it's worth being seriously critical about the offensive upside of Markkanen and Carter. Like, I've always loved Carter, but we have to see him make serious progress as an offensive
player. I mean, he's got to make shots. I mean, it was progress that he
was taking.
Shot a bunch of these jumpers without hesitation. Yeah. Teams are going to give him these shots. He can't be like dicking around and turning them down and like, if he's got the open shots, he's got to fire. And he did do that in these first two games. But again, 1 of 9 from three. I think he's something like, I think he was 3 of 11 overall yesterday, and he was 1 of 7 overall. So that's, what is that, 4 of 21? Am I doing that math right? So far shooting with almost half those shots were threes. But he also missed shots around the basket. He's got to finish better as well. Like, I will say that the way that he has been used so far is what we've wanted. He's shooting more threes. They're using him at the high post and kind of using him as that hub of the offense at times. He made some nice passes in that game yesterday. He had a nice backdoor cut pass to Zach LaVine for an easy dunk. We did see some Lowry. We saw Lowry-Wendell pick and roll where Lowry drove to the basket and hit Wendell with a lob. Like, legitimately great play. That's the kind of stuff we've been talking about. So I feel like they've been in the position to at least score. They just got to hit shots. I mean, Lowry was 0 of 5 from 3 yesterday. Like, every time I still when he shoots open threes, like, I always feel good about him shooting, but his percentages just aren't that good. And he's just got to make shots. And there's a point where, I mean, you can't blame the playmakers for I mean, you run a pick and roll with Lauri Markkanen, and he's bricking wide open threes, and Carter doing the same thing. Like, at some point, obviously you can make precision passes to the shooting pocket and all that, but at some point, these guys got to make open shots. that's a big part of
it. The question is, how many good shooters do they actually have on this team? I think Zach right. is definitely, yeah. obviously above average NBA shooter.
Kobe is as well.
Kobe, I think, will be as well. But Carter's never shown any shooting ability. Like we said, we're just happy he's getting the attempts at this point. Porter, in his peak, was a good shooter for sure.
He looked pretty good yesterday.
He still has a lot to prove, though, yeah. this season. And I do think that, like, you know, the gap between Porter and the next best small forward on the team just remains absolutely massive. And him...
Yeah, and Hutch is... He just doesn't do anything offensively. I mean, he had a nice rebound in the game yesterday. He's a solid defender, but he's just absolutely useless on offense.
He's good in transition, but he just sucks in the half court.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, yeah, we're just watching even a preseason game yesterday against when they're playing against Scrubs, and Chandler Hutchinson just can't do anything offensively. He just doesn't do anything in the half court. And it's like, what do you do here offensively? So, yeah, it's brutal. And then, obviously, like, I mean, if we want to transition here quickly to Patrick Williams, who – I think showed some really nice things. He's also a little out of control, which is natural for a raw rookie. He's turned the ball over quite a bit. He's had some defensive plays where he's just kind of been a little out of control. He like kicked a guy in the face falling for a pump fake. But I do like some of the shots he's taking. Like, he hasn't been really hesitant to shoot jumpers. He had a few nice little nifty shots around the basket, like little push floaters. I hit a few pull-up jumpers as well. I know there was his first basket. I probably wouldn't call it a great shot, but, like, I mean, he dribbled down in transition and just confidently stepped into a jumper. Like I said, normally I don't know if I'd love that shot from him, but I mean, the fact that he was confident shooting it, he tore up garbage time last night. He made a bunch of nice little plays with his defense. He had three steals, deflections in Sunday's game. So, like, I mean, I would definitely love to see him playing way more than Hutchinson at this point. I just don't really see with Hutchinson outside of some energy and defense, but.
They went on that big fourth quarter run with the two of them together. And I'm still not totally out on Hutchinson. I might be stupid for thinking that.
I just think his offense is terrible. I mean, he's fine. Like you said, he's fine as like an energy guy. He's maybe like your ninth or 10th guy, but like, he's just a terrible offensive player in half court situations. Like if the Bulls do like actually get out and run a lot when he's out on the court, like he does run the floor well. He is a decent cutter at times. Just like once the game slows down, like he's just useless out there. So like if he's playing a few minutes a game as an energy role, it's fine. It's just like I would much rather have Patrick Williams playing his minutes.
For sure. I'm going to guess that there's going to be enough minutes for both of them. And, you know, we'll see what the availability looks like among the small forwards. Obviously, Otto.
I guess also to bring this up, we did not mention this yet. Denzel already dealing with an injury, hamstring injury, and Thad Young has been out with a leg infection. Super weird. It doesn't seem like it's long-term stuff, but that has kind of given guys like Patrick Williams, Hutch, and some of these other guys towards the end of the bench a bit more time to play in these preseason games.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up Patrick Williams because I was pretty we've been over it on Kobe. Like, I think he's talented, but, you know, I just don't know if he's going to be able to handle the starting point guard role. So I was a little discouraged about that. Markkanen, I was really discouraged about. I think he shot 1 for 10 in the second game from the field, yes. And that's when they won. And in the first game, on the first possession of the game, he threw a pass to the corner. I think he was looking for Levine. He threw it into like the fourth row of the stands. It was an awful pass. He had another play in that game where he came around a screen and took a three that hit the top of the backboard. It's like, oh my God, dude. It was actually hilarious. But he did get his offense going a little bit there in that first game. He ended 5 of 8 with 13 points. He hit three threes. So, despite some like serious lowlights, he did get his offense going slightly in the first game. Second game, he was just miserable. So I've been a little discouraged about that. I've always loved Carter, and now I'm starting to get discouraged about Carter because, you know, it's more than like you just got to make a jump shot. It's like you just need to have a positive impact on the offense. And to me, all of the offensive skill we've talked about with him, we just haven't really seen it take hold in the NBA. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention that Will Gottlieb wrote a great piece on Wendell today and sort of how his role is going to be different under Billy Donovan. I thought that was really encouraging. That actually made me a little bit more optimistic than watching the first two games. Because when I watched the first two games, I'm like, man, Wendell, like, maybe he doesn't have it either. So this is my very... I think he has it defensively, but just offensively, it's been discouraging. Yeah. So this is my very long preamble to say thank God for Patrick Williams, because I could be totally overreacting to this, but I think Patrick Williams looks great. I think he looks great on both ends of the floor. Like you said, defensively, he was getting a bunch of deflections. He looks like he has really good anticipation instincts. Stefan Noe pointed out that he's a good cutter, which we also saw at Florida State. He's able to like find his way into cracks of the defense to like pick up some like opportunistic scoring chances where he doesn't really need to be pounding the ball as a dribbler to score. I think his he looks really confident in his shooting ability. I tweeted out a couple shots of him making above the break threes. One is a relocation off an offensive rebound. That's super encouraging because, you know, you're thinking, well, maybe you could hit corner threes reliably at first, but if he's already stepping confidently into threes above the break, like those are difficult shots to hit at the NBA level. His second one was even like way behind the line too. So I'm encouraged by that. I think offensively, he just has a lot of untapped potential. And while he was sort of built up, I think, as a defense first prospect in the pre-draft process, you know, the more you look into it, the flashes are just so enticing offensively. So I'm really excited by Patrick Williams. I think all Bulls fans should be. I was doing a national podcast last week, and the guys there were just like totally bagging on Patrick Williams for not starting a game in college. And I think that if that is like the national perception of him, that he's going to prove a lot of people wrong. And I'm not saying that he's going to be like a clearly above average impact player this year as a rookie. He was the youngest born American player in this draft class. But long term, I think that it's a good thing that the Bulls took him, and it's going to be exciting to watch him develop.
Yeah, the offensive stuff, just the fact that he's been so confident, like taking shots, has been really nice to see. Again, he didn't shoot well in the second game. He was only 4-12, had some struggles finishing and some ugly turnovers. But like I said, heated up a bit at the end, in the end of the game in the fourth quarter. It was garbage time, but just the, like I said, his jumper looks pretty smooth. Like I said, the confidence has been there taking it. Just been doing a lot of nice little things. So for such a young guy, these first couple games, getting these minutes, it definitely is good to see. I'm not going to go like fucking apeshit with it. Some people who like to say the Kawhi Leonard stuff. It's like, let's chill out here. Like just let this guy grow and develop, be patient with him. And like I said, I hope he has a big spot in the rotation. I think he probably should, especially if there's going to be guys in and out of the lineup. It was definitely a breath of fresh air. It's, even in that first game, which was awful, like mostly awful, like Patrick Williams is one of the few bright spots there. And then even the second game, even though we didn't shoot as well, he also just had some nice impact plays, and that was good to see. I'm trying to think of what else there really, like I said, we talked about Lowry, talked about Carter, like mixed bag for them, mixed bag for Kobe. I mean, Zach looks good. I do like seeing Zach, like, not, I feel like it was noticeable that, I know he still took a lot of shots, but I feel like it was noticeable that he wasn't doing a lot of just like pounding the ball and like just taking terrible shots. He did have a few rough turnovers, but like, it's like him in an off ball role and not having to dominate the ball so much. I mean, he just gets points so easily. And I think he'll probably have another really nice year and score a shit ton of points and do it pretty efficiently. Just again, it depends on if the offense, if they can just turn that into legitimate offense. And like the first game, their offense was bad. Their offensive rating was like 100. It was a little better overall in game two, but still wasn't that great. So like clearly still a major work in progress for this Bulls team. And again, this was against a Rockets team missing a few of their best players, facing a lot of bums and some guys who have missed a lot of time. So like, I don't want to say like this, like, definitely means the Bulls are going to be super horrible, but wasn't totally super, super encouraged, but we'll see. It's only been a couple preseason games. Although I feel like a lot of people don't really have high expectations for the Bulls anyways. I guess my expectations are just that they should be competing for the play-in tournament. They will obviously have to come together quickly here to start the season against that schedule. Otherwise they could get into a big deep hole. And I guess we'll see. Did you have any other kind of leftover thoughts from these first couple games?
Not really. I think that I want to see more of Williams and Hutchinson together. They did that in the fourth quarter of their preseason win in the second game. But yeah, man, my main takeaway from these two games is that it's probably going to be a long season. And it's not surprising. We didn't expect the Bulls to even be one of the 8 best teams in the East. But, you know, it's this roster. I would be really surprised if they even made a run at like the 7 or the 8 seed. I just don't think they have quite enough playmaking. I think the guard play is going to hold them back. And I am more unsure than ever about Carter and more unsure than ever about Markkanen. And we'll see what happens. I mean, hopefully, you know, Donovan will be able to be a significant improvement over Boylan, and just the coaching change alone will help everyone progress and sort of look better at the end of this season than they do at the start of it. The Bulls also have been off since March, so maybe it's unrealistic to expect them to come back after a layoff that long and to look great right away. But I thought the first two preseason games were pretty discouraging, even though they won one of them. So we'll see. For now, I'm just excited to get into the regular season. Hopefully everyone is able to stay healthy, not just the players, but all the people, you know, in the ecosystem around the NBA. And yeah, it's crazy that we're starting this up.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're basically, what, a week now from the start of the season, December 22nd. The Bulls start, I believe, the 23rd against the Hawks. And we got two preseason games left. They got two games against the Thunder. Don't really know how much we'll see how much the Bulls play their main guys. The Thunder, obviously a team who is going to take a major step back this season. They still have some decent guys on the roster, but I'm really not sure how much we'll really learn from these last two preseason games against the Thunder. And then we'll dive right into the regular season against a pretty tough, damn tough schedule to open the season. And they're going to go right in the fire. And even if, like I said, the expectations aren't super high here, I still am excited to see them play in real games again. And like I said, hopefully they stay healthy. Hopefully nothing crazy happens with not only COVID, with other regular injuries, because we just haven't been able to see that. And hopefully we just learn a bit more about what these guys, this roster and this core, and then hopefully the front office picks a direction depending on how things go to start this season. So
yeah, we'll see. Like a year ago at this time, I thought they were going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I know you were.
So that obviously didn't happen. And maybe that's something that plays into it. If, you know, Otto Porter is available for the majority of the season, and if he's in good shape and if he performs as well as we thought he would when they originally acquired him, that could change the calculus of the season, right? Like, there's a few things that could take the Bulls into a spot where the regular season is pretty competitive. But yeah, a lot of teams improved, I think, over the offseason. Bulls didn't really improve. So, you know, we'll see if just making the coaching change is enough to put them in a better position.
Absolutely. I think that's all. I got nothing else. So we'll wrap it up here. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online. For us here at Cash Considerations, rate and review us. Wherever you listen to your pods, we're on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. And there's, with the season starting up, all the great NBA pods across the Blue Wire Network. And then obviously with the NFL season winding down, heading into the playoffs, we have NFL pods. We have other great pods across this network as well. So for Chase and Ricky, this has been Cash Considerations. The Bulls are back. The Bulls are looking iffy, but we'll see. Again, two more preseason games, then the NBA, the regular season starts in basically about a week. So we will talk to you guys next time, probably one more time before the start of the season, and we'll see how these next couple preseason games go. Talk to you guys later.